Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Steph Curry is the new three-point shooting king. Is his record now untouchable moving forward? Mac Jones is sticking to the game plan in his rookie season. Should defenses fear the Patriots signal caller? And the curse of Nick's tears, could it come calling for the Chiefs this week? Good morning and welcome to First Things First, everyone. Jenna Wolf, Nick Wright, Chris Broussard, Kevin Wiles, a lot on the line for your Chiefs tomorrow night. Nick, we getting nervous at all, or you can show me that steady hand?
Well, I'm just confused by a number of things. One is the curse is obviously dead, and two is who said the Chiefs are atop the tiers? I was very impressed by the Rams this week, the Packers, the Bucks.
Who even said they were atop the tiers? Poorly on my part. That was a poor assumption. It'll never happen again. But you know where we got to start, guys. At the Garden, Knicks hosting Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors. It didn't take long. It did not take long for that. For Curry to make history. For Curry to step out and knock down his second triple of the game. And for Curry to hit 2,974 for his career. Passing Ray Allen for the most threes ever. And what a moment it was for Steph Curry. The Garden faithful on their feet. Steph's parents, Steve Kerr, Ray Allen, all congratulating him. Super an emotional and historic night as the Warriors went on to beat the Knicks, get the win. But for Curry, he breaks Allen's 10-year-old record in game number 789. Now, Allen and Reggie Miller finished with over 1,300 games played each. So pretty amazing stuff from the new three-point king, Steph Curry. Take a listen.
They got their jerseys right here, obviously. And then, what's that?
Come on in. Tell them to come on in here. Let's hear this.
Yeah, yeah, come on in. So this is this is pretty special, man.
That's what it's about.
I've been thinking about this number for a long time. I even got it on my shoes. So basketball history, this is pretty special. I mean, like I said, these two, you know, legends. I watched them growing up and understood what it meant to shoot the ball because of them and my dad. And full circle moment, man. I'm blessed for sure.
I pride myself on shooting a high percentage. I pride myself on allowing that to help us win games. And now I can pride myself on the longevity of getting to that number that Ray set and hopefully pushing it to a number that nobody can reach. We'll see what happens, but that's something that the balance of volume and efficiency for me is the standard that I wanted to set. And I never want to call myself the greatest shooter until I got this record, so I'm comfortable saying that now.
All right, Chris Broussard, put this in perspective for us. How big of a deal is Steph's record?
Well, look, last night was tremendous. It was great to see Ray Allen there, Reggie Miller on the call, TNT, the NBA, the Madison Square Garden to stop the game. It was great, all right? But let's just keep it real. It was overblown, all right? He didn't break Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's scoring record. He didn't even break John Stockton's assist record. That's what happened last night. I would expect to see when those records fall, if anyone ever gets to Stockton or Kareem.
The assist record?
All right, this was more like, yeah, the assist record will be big. I think that's second. Rebounds, nobody's record? Getting near Wilt or Russell. Yes, yeah, because Stockton's put it so far out of reach. However, let me get back to my point. This was more Wilds like the steals record. It's nice. All right, he broke the steals record. Great, hurrah. But, I mean, it's a little overblown. But let me say this, because I love Steph. I firmly believe, I was the first one way back in 2015 on national TV to say he was the best shooter ever. I really think I was the first one to say that. So I've been saying it for a long time. But Wilds, I think the reason that this was so overdone and overblown by everyone is because it was an official acknowledgement of two things. One, as I said, Steph is the greatest shooter ever. Everybody's been saying that now for several years. Last night was the official acknowledgement of it. And two, that this guy has changed the game more than so many other people. Like, it was an official acknowledgement of how much he changed the game. I would say Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell, Dr. J, Julius Irving, Magic and Bird, because they were big men who played on the perimeter, shot the ball, made plays, all that stuff, and Steph. Now, that doesn't mean they're the best. Obviously, I didn't mention Jordan and LeBron. But as far as literally changing the game, Steph Curry is right there with those guys. And I think last night was overdone because it was an acknowledgement of that. Look at this graphic. The number of three-pointers attempted per game in the NBA when Steph began shooting a lot, when he broke Ray Allen's three-point mark for threes made in a season, teams were averaging 18 three-pointers a game that year. Now they're averaging 35 three-point attempts per game. That's an increase of 7. It's basically doubling it. And all of that is due to Steph Curry. So that was an acknowledgement of what he's done. I think that's why it was so overblown.
So a couple things. One is Broussard was, because I keep track of these things, the first person to call Steph the greatest shooter ever. It got overshadowed because then Mark Jackson on the same network you were on tried to steal your thunder and called Steph and Clay the greatest backcourt ever. Everyone focused on that. Mark Jackson was maybe right. Broussard was definitely right. So I'll give you credit there. It's unfortunate now folks will just be like, man, Broussard really just, you know, bleeped all over Steph this morning just for no reason. So no one cares about the record. Might as well be the free throws record. But no, you were. I remember when you said it. I remember when you said it. People don't know. I've been a fan of Chris Broussard from afar. Now I just argue with him about his takes. But all that's true. But I want to, there's two things I want to say here. And I know nobody wants math in the morning. But I want people to understand this. If this record is ever broken, the person who breaks it is not currently in the NBA. I would bet my life on that. The numbers here, people are bad at math and they don't get it. A little context. Steph now has made more threes than KD and Kyrie combined, while shooting fewer threes in his career than James Harden has. Okay? Steph is right around 3,000 now. He'll finish his career, let's assume, right around 5,000. So how are you going to, what would it take to break it? All right, well, here's simple. How about 300 threes a season for 17 years? Well, I guess somebody maybe could play 17 years. I don't know. What about hitting 300 threes? The full list of human beings alive who have ever hit 300, not 400, 300 threes in a season. Steph Curry, 4 times. James Harden, once. That's your list. Nick, what about Trae Young? Trae Young's career high in threes is 205. Trae would need to hit 300 threes a year for the next 15 years to get to where Steph's going to leave this record. No one is going to break Ray Allen's record again, other than Harden, for the next decade. That's just the math of it, guys. So this is, I don't know if it's unbreakable, but if it's going to be broken, it's not by Luka, it's not by Donovan, it's not by Trey, it's by someone who either hasn't been born yet or isn't in the league yet. That's the first point. Second point is this, Wilds, and this is why I think it's special, but also why, in a weird way, Steph is sometimes maybe underrated. It's inarguable, and it might be the only thing in sports that's inarguable. Steph Curry, greatest shooter ever. If I were to say to you, who's the best baseball player ever, you might get 10 different names. Even your guy, GOAT, Tom Brady. If you ask 100 football fans who's the greatest quarterback ever, some would argue Peyton Manning. And they'd have a legitimate argument. I'm not saying you'd agree with it, but you can make the case, right? Someone could make the case that as far as what they or Joe Montana, somebody might even say Johnny Unitas. There is the greatest basketball player ever is a hotly contested debate. There is no argument for anyone else. Okay, but you guys, all right, you're being funny.
I'm joking.
But it's debated. There is no argument. This is the only thing I can compare it to is what, Secretariat and horse racing, I guess. But people don't have a bunch of those debates. Gretzky and hockey, I don't know, maybe. It's greatest shooter ever with no counterpoint. It's one of the only undebatable things in sports, Wilds.
That's good. That's solid. For a debate show, that was a good non-debate point. so I want to get back to what you said and a little bit of what Broussard said. Even for a non-debate show. You said if someone's going to break this record, they haven't been born yet or they're not currently in the league. The ultimate, I'll take the field. They haven't been born yet. I'll just take all of eternity. So here's why I think Steph changed the game, because you heard a lot of like Steph changed the game. But it feels like everyone is talking about the peak of the basketball mountaintop, which is the NBA. The mountain of basketball is gigantic. And Steph's most, I think, important or impactful change of the game starts down here. It's at the bottom. It's where everyone else plays. It's how kids play. Like, quick story, I played 2-on-2 with some kids. I'm like, these kids don't look that good. They're like 19 years old. I call 19-year-olds kids. And they're taking shots from so far away. I'm like, what is happening? This is a totally different game than the one that I grew up with.
Right.
And I think it started with this 2016 shot from Steph. So we're not only talking, Broussard, about the quantities of threes, but the distance of threes. And like, yeah, Reggie made a deep one at the Garden famously, but Steph makes these all the time. And this led to Dame making his big shot and Paul George being like, it's a bad shot. It's actually not. And here's my final point, Jenna, because I know we got to go to break. Everyone from a generation of older than me kind of grew up modeling their game after Dr. J. Everyone, literally everyone in the planet who's my age modeled their game after Jordan. The best person who modeled their game after Jordan was Kobe Bryant. He literally became as close to Michael Jordan as you could possibly get. And your game centers around getting to the basket, athleticism, and little mid-ranges. But now, for the kids that are playing right now basketball, it is not only take a lot of threes, which this record was, it's go further and further back, and that is now a good shot. A shot that us on this show literally never grew up taking one of. Like, Broussard, when you were growing up, you were like, you know where I'm going to shoot from? 30 feet. Not as a joke. But kids are currently doing that. And that's how I think Steph has changed the game and impacted the game at the most minor league and roots level.
Here we go.
Go ahead.
Jenna, when Broussard was growing up, though,
I was too busy dunking. I was too busy going to the rack dunking on people. I was too busy going to the old dunking on cats. I mean, I wouldn't worry about threes.
Hey, big night for Steph Curry last night. We'll have Antoine Walker on a little bit, talk about putting it in perspective for him. But we got to talk some Lakers. Is trading Russell Westbrook something they're actually considering? We're going to dive into that. And then at the top of the hour, Knicks got some new NFL tiers to unveil. Among the many questions answered today, have the Patriots closed the gap on the top tier Chiefs? So much going on a Wednesday morning, Becca.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
We're drawing a blank on a Wednesday morning. How about this? The Lakers have reportedly held internal discussions about trading Russell Westbrook, the same Russell Westbrook who's only played 28 games with the Lakers this season. The report said the trio of LeBron, AD, and Russ hasn't blended as well as some Lakers figures had hoped. Hey, Chris Broussard, the Lakers trading Russ would be blank.
It would be Heartbreak Hotel, Jenna. Heartbreak Hotel. And I'm going to, because I'm telling this from Russ's standpoint, because let's face it, we all know, even Nick, the eternal Lakers fan, because of LeBron, said that it's not a good fit. We all knew this wasn't going to work. I don't know why it took LeBron and Rob Pelinka so long to figure it out, okay? So we know from a basketball standpoint, if they can trade him for a good value, you do it. But from Russ's standpoint, it would be heartbreaking. We all see how happy he is to be back in L.A., his hometown, to playing for the team he grew up rooting for. I mean, he's almost too jolly. Like, I haven't seen Russ smile this much, and he's so happy, you know. In a post-game presser, Russ, you had 8 turnovers, 5 in the fourth quarter. What do you think? It'll work itself out. You know, I'm just happy, man, to be here. You know? Like, he's overjoyed. And Russ is like that supermodel, and I feel for him because if he's traded, he's like the supermodel that looks so good, everybody wants to date her, and then you finally start dating her, and you're like, man, this isn't what I thought it was. But others are sitting there saying, hey, I'll take her.
We've all.
And look at this. Kevin Durant left Russ. Paul George sang Russ's praises, then jetted to play with Kawhi. James Harden, they're buddies. They grew up playing together, right, as 10-year-olds. Get Russ out of here after a year. Bradley Beal, they parted ways. And now LeBron and AD after, what, a couple months? This would be heartbreaking for Russ, from Russ's standpoint.
Okay, so my answer, Broussard, is a great answer, that Russ needs to be angrier. It's a great answer. My answer is legacy edit. So, Nick, as the resident historian on the show, who occasionally drops, you know, Russ, you know, possibly 37th best player of all time. You're like, hold on, what? Let me do the math here. When people actually look at Russ's legacy with a fine-tooth comb, let's say in 10 years, 20 years, does this rumor, even this rumor, pop up as a strike on his legacy, as a mark on his legacy? And part of me is in legacy mode just because we just saw Steph stay with one team, and we were talking about, man, Steph should move on, but like the Warriors are like, we're never moving on from Steph. And I think people put Steph and Russ not exactly on the same tier, but there's not a canyon, there's not a gulf of how differently people think about them. They're both great players of this generation. But should there be? Would you even consider a trade rumor a mark on his legacy?
No, but getting, not the rumor, but getting traded would be to a degree. And so my answer is a forklift. So that might not make sense, but I think it will in a moment. A forklift is super useful, maybe the most useful tool in the world for a very specific task. I've got this giant heavy load of stuff. I need to move it from one place to another and lift it up. But the problem with a forklift is that's literally all it can do. It's not like, hey, going to the club tonight, driving my forklift there. You would look ridiculous. And Russ is one of the greatest ever at give him any collection of mediocre to bad players. And he'll get you to 500. He will make you relevant. But unfortunately, at this point, that's all he can do. If you put great players around him, if you put him in a garage with a Lamborghini and a Maybach and a Rolls, guess what? Nobody will literally even one time take the forklift out for a spin. In fact, they might be like, can we trade that in for an e-bike? Just seems more fun. And so he needs to be a little more of a transformer, and he isn't. He's at this point, he does one thing really well. Like, throw Russ back on the Thunder. And guess what? They'll hover around 500. I believe they could. But you put him on a team with LeBron and AD, and not only does he not help, some would argue he hurts. So that's the problem. Like, and that's why he's not anywhere close to the tier Steph is in and the other greatest guards of his generation, Jim.
All right, Lakers in action tonight down in Dallas. Also, Transformers, more than meets the eye. Back talking tears now.
That's right.
Is Nick really going to subject his Chiefs to the tears curse tomorrow night? We're talking that. We got 80s toys, Tonka trucks. Things are happening. Can you tear me now? At time of the week, Nick's got a fresh edition of the NFL tears hot off the proverbial press because we ran out of newspaper. We are 3/4 of the way into the season. and a three-way tie for the best record at the top of each conference after week 14 for the first time in 50 years. Safe to say, it's a big week. So, Nick, take us through your NFL tiers entering week 15.
Reminder, once you're eliminated from playoff contention, you're eliminated from being graced by even showing up on the tier. So now we're down to a 28-team tier. Houston, Detroit, Jacksonville, and the Jets. You won't see them. You also won't see a lot of these teams much longer. Show us the groups that won't be named. Maybe one of these NFC teams will sneak in. But these teams flatly don't matter. They just matter more than the teams that have already been eliminated. Now, let's get to the name tiers. Stop taking a victory lap, Broussard, that the Seahawks haven't been eliminated yet. It's beneath you. Oddly dangerous.
For that. They're still
if
alive.
Any of these teams actually make the playoffs, they're going to be dangerous because they're going to be hot. They have shown at times they can beat good teams. You don't really believe in them, but they're oddly dangerous. All right, give me the next group of teams, please. This group here, walking wounded. So how are they wounded? The Ravens, Lamar is hurt, and so is the whole defense. The Steelers, Big Ben is hurt by, you know, geriatric issues. The Titans don't have Derrick Henry. Baker Mayfield's broken down. Nick, what's wounded about the Bills? Psychologically, they're wounded. Have you seen their post-game press conferences lately? Josh Allen out here thinking they won. Those all are wounded AFC teams that are not long for the postseason. Next grouping, if you would, please. This group of teams right here, legitimately scary. Now, none of them are guaranteed to make the playoffs, but any of them, if they do, and I'm including the all of a sudden getting right Niners, if they make the playoffs, not only could upset a division winner in the opening round of the playoffs, I think any of those teams with the right matchups and the right breaks could make a conference championship game. Those are legitimately scary teams, all of them for different reasons. The quarterbacks of Burrow and Herbert, the overall team of the Niners, and the running game and physicality of the Colts. All right, very good, but not great. So these are teams that are very good. There is no argument they are not very good. However, they're not great. It's hard to just fully buy in, believe in them. The Cowboys are playing some of their most uninspiring football of the year. The Rams just had a great win, but it came after playing badly for a month. The Cardinals, who have had some of the best turnover luck and fumble luck in NFL history, seems like that's regressing back to the mean. And the Patriots, obviously, it's very hard to be a great team when no one on your team trusts your quarterback. Now, to the truly best teams. The number one contenders, to me, this is going to be a rematch of the NFC Championship game. We've been saying that throughout the season. You have two of the six best quarterbacks ever. You have two very good head coaches, good, not great, but good defenses, teams that know how to win playoff games, teams that feel they can go on the road and win. Those are your number one contenders. And then, of course, the favorites stay the favorites. You know how I know the Chiefs are the favorites? Here's how I know it. No. Because, Chiefs. Because an amazing thing happened, not just on this show, but across media. A transformation of the Las Vegas Raiders into the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Raiders immediately became just a laughingstock, terrible team. As if we hadn't just seen in the most watched football game since the Super Bowl on Thanksgiving, the Raiders beat the Cowboys and hanging 36 on them. We all saw it. 30 million people watched it. Yet 2 weeks later, it's like, oh, the Raiders. Who doesn't beat them 48-9? Well, nobody but the Chiefs. The Chiefs are clearly the favorites. They have the number one defense in football over the last 2 months. They're the most talented quarterback in the league. They're rounding into form. Broussard, while I am not bothered by your attacks because I know they're coming from, you know, a place of deep-seated psychological issues, the committee has been bothered by them. The committee really would like the Broussard stamp of approval this week. Is the committee going to get it?
Well, here's what I'm going to say to the committee, Nick. You're welcome. You're welcome. All right, because this is some of your best work. And the reason I'm saying you're welcome
is
because you responded correctly, committee, to my threat. You remember last week, I made a serious threat. People thought I was joking. I think Nick may have thought I was joking. I was dead serious. I wanted an investigation of the committee. And I didn't get it.
Yeah, because you wanted
but
the
threat
one.
Of the investigation and fines, penalties, the whole nine yards, made the committee straighten up and fly right. Because, Nick, job well done. I don't know how much you had to do with it or if the committee overruled you like they usually do, but job well done. And the categories are great. All right, you took it off the screen, but oddly dangerous, I agree. I'm not so much worried about Miami, but Denver and Minnesota, they are oddly dangerous. For all their flaws, they're pretty good teams that can pull off upsets. Legitimately scary, especially Indianapolis and San Francisco. Obviously, the other two teams, Bengals and the Chargers, have high ceilings, but they're up and down. Indy and San Fran, if healthy, could be scary. Very good. I do think the Rams possibly could jump to great, but right now that's fair. Very good, not great. My only beef is this. It's kind of minor, but I'm going to say it. I think there's a strong argument, Nick, for Green Bay to be the favorite rather than Kansas City. I think all season long, outside of week one, where Green Bay was horrible, I think they've been more consistent than Kansas City, and they've got better wins. They beat their wins over Arizona and the Rams are better than any wins that the Chiefs have. Now, I know you're going to bring up, but the Chiefs beat Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers was hurt. I know you don't know that, but he didn't play. All right, not hurt, but out with COVID. He didn't play. All right, so I think there's a strong argument that you could, at the very least, Nick, put Green Bay alongside the Chiefs as the favorites because it's going to be two of them in the Super Bowl. So that is my main thing. And your argument about the Chiefs was okay, but here's where you went awry. You big upped the Raiders, right? Oh, they rolled over the Raiders. Mm-hmm. Everybody's poo-pooing it. The Raiders aren't in the top group of your tiers. That's the problem. You just praise the Raiders, and they're one of your bottom tier groups that's going to be out in a couple of weeks. So that was your misstep with the argument. But overall, the committee did a good job. I'm glad to see that they responded well to my threat.
Yeah, I'm glad to see the committee didn't listen to you and have the Cardinals as the favorites. That's, I think, why you wanted the investigation, because that would look just ludicrous and ridiculous. First point. Second point is the Raiders fell out because they had their soul stolen from them at the Arrowhead. Literally, not even from the game. Stomping on the Arrowhead at midfield, that wanton sign of disrespect. It's like building a house on burial grounds. You don't do it. Bad things coming. So that's why I'm with the Raiders. In regards to the Packers, Wilds, I'll just be quick here because we've been having audio issues throughout the show. So Broussard cut out for a bit there. All I heard him say is, I know the Chiefs beat the Packers. And yes, that's correct. They did. So it's very hard to have the Packers ahead of the Chiefs because they played and the Chiefs won. So it's just very difficult. They played head-to-head and one team won, one team lost. So when they have very similar records, it's going to be hard to have someone ahead of the other. But go ahead, Wild.
Okay, here's my issue. And I know everyone's going to think, Wild's going to go in on the Patriots. I'm not. I want to be an underdog, and I want to have the bye. So if I can have both of those things, I'm very happy. But I don't quite understand the rationale on why the Chiefs are better than the Bucks. Because the Bucks don't want to be an underdog. The Bucks are literally the reigning champions. And I understand the Chiefs are great for the following reasons. They've got the continuity of a team that went to the Super Bowl. That's good. They've got great skill players. Yep, that's great. And they've got a wonderful quarterback. Understand, that's the argument you make against Chiefs-Patriots. Does that argument hold any water against the Bucks whatsoever? The Bucks have a better record. They just beat the team, the Bills, in a little bit of a weird game, but that same Bills team beat the Chiefs by 18 points, and the Bucs literally beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. Ah, but what about Mahomes? All right, what about Tom Brady? Tom Brady has 500 more yards and 9 more touchdowns than Mahomes. Oh, the defense. The Bucs defense has the third best rushing defense. And, their passing defense. Kansas City's passing defense and the Bucks' passing defense are literally the same. They give up 252 yards a game. So I don't understand at all why the reigning Super Bowl champs, with the greatest quarterback of all time, with a better record and better skill players and a great coach, don't deserve the number one spot. There's an old axiom.
Well, I don't.
You want to be the champ, you got to beat the champ. You didn't. Literally, okay. You lost a champ, and somehow they're knocked down.
No, listen. This is why, despite your objections, we haven't done Wild's NFL tiers, because it would just be last year's standings. They're still the champs. I mean, the Bucs are still the champs, so they have to remain number one. So that is obviously folly, rationale, and reasoning. You also said a few things there I disagree with. One is you said the Bucs have better skill position guys. I disagree with that. If you put all the Bucks and Chiefs skill position guys in a room together, not only would the first pick be a Chief, the first two picks would be a Chief. It would go Hill, Kelsey. Then it would be a bunch of Bucks after that, but the top two picks would be Chiefs players. There's no doubt about that. That's second of all. Third of all, the Bucks are not as healthy as the Chiefs. Fourth of all, while the Bucks have a better run defense, the Chiefs have a far and away better pass defense, and I think that is more relevant in 2021. Again, your point that overall in the totality of the season, the pass defenses look similar, that's true. But in part, that's because the Bucks at the beginning of the season were healthier, the Chiefs at the beginning of the season were a mess, but now they've been 2 months of excellent. And lastly, while the Bucks might have a better win than the Chiefs, they also have two bad losses. Losing to New Orleans the way they did and losing to Washington are bad losses. The Chiefs have only lost to good teams. So for all those reasons, the committee, what is there a problem? I'm just curious. Is Washington losing? I know why. That's right. The Saints are, I'm supposed to say the Saints are good because they beat not only the Bucs, they also mollywopped your Patriots when Mac Jones was allowed to throw and he threw three picks. Forgot about that part of it. I forgot. The Saints are good. My bad. Go ahead, Jenna. It's a good team. Saints are a good team.
Meanwhile, how close is it all? 13 teams in each conference, either in a playoff spot or within a game of one. This is going to be a fun week 15. Great job, Nick. All right, let's hand out some NBA medals now. Only three games last night. Suns Blazers, one of them. Dame put up 31-10, but Phoenix still nabbed the win. Dame missing out on a medal. Nick, which three guys were podium-worthy performers last night?
Well, Phoenix nabbed the win because of Chris Paul, so he gets a bronze. 24-8-14, and the game-tying jump shot at the end of regulation to force overtime. Chris Paul gets a bronze. Silver medal, Kevin Durant, 34-13-11. Most importantly and most curiously, 48 minutes played. I understand the Nets only had eight guys. I understand they're dealing with COVID issues. What Steve Nash doesn't understand is this isn't an elimination game, buddy. Maybe let Easy Money Sniper have a few minutes of rest. Maybe you lose to the Raptors, still the best record in the East. It's almost as if Nash has no idea what he's doing, but KD bails him out again. And then the gold. Not a great game, but a record-breaking game. Stephen Curry gets the gold. And by the way, if you're a Warriors fan, you're happy this record is now put to bed. Before we started talking about Steph breaking the record, he was 28-6-7 on the year. In the four games where it was like, is he going to break the record? 22-5-4. I think now that the monkey's off his back, he'll get back to playing at the MVP level he was before. There's your podium, Jenna, from last night in the NBA.
Good stuff. All right, we're going to dive much more into Steph's big night last night coming up in a little bit. But we got to talk some Mac Jones. The Colts defense wants to make Mac throw the football on Sunday and throw. Are they making a big mistake in doing so? Talking some Patriots next. First things first. Celebrate Christmas with just that. Boom. Fox Sports proudly presents a documentary tribute to one of football's most beloved figures, the coach, the broadcaster, the video game, all Madden, premieres Christmas Day on Fox. Looking forward to that. You are now entering the No Bull Zone, sponsored by Credible Great Rates with None of the Bull. And we are previewing your Saturday night plans, which, if they're anything like mine, it'll be on the couch for Colts and Patriots. It's a big one for New England. They've won a league best 7 in a row and a win this week and next, and they lock up the division. So how do they win? Well, a number of different ways. Defense, short passes, even no passes. Well, three. as we saw last week. Complimentary football, as Coach Mangini always says. Well, Colts linebacker Bobby Okereke said he understands just how dangerous the Patriots' run game is. So the plan is to, quote, try to make the game one-dimensional, see what Mac Jones can do. Wilds, it doesn't sound like the Colts defense fears Mac Jones. Should they, though?
Oh. Well, Jenna, I mean this with all sincerity. I don't care at all. I'm not running a haunted house where whether or not you're afraid affects the success of my business. If you don't fear Mac Jones, that's fine. No one feared Tom Brady when he won the Super Bowl. We don't have, if you go to Foxborough, there in the, you look at the Super Bowl banner, there's not an asterisk down there like, by the way, no one feared Tom Brady. He actually averaged under 200 yards passing in the season. Doesn't matter. Fear doesn't matter. And rather than being scary, what you should be worried about is the chameleon nature of the Patriots. What exactly shape or color are they going to make? Are they going to be? Are we going to be the team like that played the Browns that scored 45 points and won? Or is it going to be a team that played the Falcons the next week and shut them out? Or maybe it's going to be the team that played the Titans who aired it out and didn't really run the ball a ton, didn't have one 50-yard rusher. Or no, it's going to be the team that doesn't throw it at all and runs it down your throat like against the Bills. So whether or not the Colts are scared of the Patriots doesn't matter. Because Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels can beat you in a myriad of ways. Whether you're not afraid of them doesn't matter because you're going to leave with a loss.
You're making
this
a plural and it's a singular.
And you're going to get home.
This is a problem of, you know, I don't know how you did in ninth grade English, but this we're on a singular tense,
excellent,
not a plural tense. You're saying them and the Patriots and McDaniels and Belichick. We're asking about one human being, Mac Jones. Should defenses fear Mac Jones? And through that entire dissertation, I didn't hear a yes. I heard an I don't care. I heard about your run defense. I heard about you shutting an opponent out. And here's why it matters. Because people... It infuriates me on behalf of Brady, the Mac Jones-Brady comparisons, but I'll walk down that path with you. That Super Bowl they won, Broussard, how'd they win it in the end? Brady drove them down the field against the Rams to set up the field goal. And the question is, do we have any evidence or reason to believe that Mac Jones, if the game is on his right arm, can do it.
Do the same thing.
We have no evidence of it. Maybe one time this year you can say he did it. It was against the Texans in a game they were down 13 because he threw a pick to start the second half. There's not another game all year you can say Mac Jones carried them. That's the fear for the Patriots, is that at some point in the NFL, Red Grange ain't walking through that door. Your quarterback is going to have to win you a game. And nobody that isn't wearing Patriots pajamas thinks Mac Jones can. And they are so unafraid, Broussard, that they're openly saying, well, we hope McCorkle beats us. Because that's the one thing they can't do.
Yeah, Nick, I'm going to have to agree with you on some of that. Because Wilds, you were spinning, you were running, you were deflecting,
like
whatever it was. But it was, yeah, it was a nice try, okay? Because it doesn't matter if you don't fear us. I think it really does bother you. I think it really pains you inside.
Of course it bothers
to
him.
Know that for all your baby goat talk, no one is afraid of Mac Jones. All right, so I had to say that, Wiles, but just tear you down, but now I'm going to build you back up. Because even though no one fears Mac Jones, you know what they do? They respect Mac Jones. And, Nick, you have to admit that teams respect him. I can't say that about any other rookie quarterback in today's NFL, and I can't say that about a lot of the other veteran starters in the league. But opponents respect Mac Jones because they know he's going to be given a great game plan by his coaching staff, and he's going to execute it. They know he's going to play smart, and not make many bad decisions or mistakes. All right, and they know he gets rid of the ball quickly, and he's accurate. You respect the guy that completes 70% of his passes. All right, and even if he only throws for 220 yards a game, you still respect him. All right, and Nick, you pointed out a game, but Mac Jones has thrown for 300-plus yards twice this season. So that shows, oh, he's not Aaron Rodgers. No, he's not Patrick Mahomes. But when he has to, when it's necessary, he can air it out a bit. We've seen him thread the needle. We've seen him throw some great passes. So while they don't need to fear him, but they got to respect him, and that's what Mac Jones has, the respect of his opponents.
100% agree. And Nick, I will give you an olive branch because you said something interesting. You say, oh, yeah, it bothers Wilds. I can tell it bothers him. I will give you a little check mark and the good take mark where, yes, I do. There is a visceral joy of watching Tom Brady and Randy Moss in Foxborough that currently the Patriots don't have. But it's the same visceral joy as like watching a Mike Tyson fight versus Floyd Mayweather. Who is the more feared fighter? Well, Mike Tyson. Who is the more exciting fighter? Oh, Mike Tyson. No. Who won the most? Who is considered the best, the better fighter? Well, it's Floyd, isn't it? When Floyd has that big table full of money, who wins? So I'm actually about wins. But yes, you are right. There is a little visceral joy that I miss about Randy Moss and Tom Brady that I haven't gotten yet.
It's not
baby goat. I don't call him the adult goat. I don't even call him teenage goat.
It's not.
I don't call him
Tyson.
Toddler goat. I call him baby goat because we are growing and getting to the point where he'll be able to air it out like Tom Brady, the adult
pre-goat.
But here is the issue, buddy. You did the wrong cross sport comparison. It's not Tyson Mayweather. It's race car driving. And what everyone is trying to tell you is Mac Jones happens to drive the car that the most money was put into this offseason, that has the best pit crew, that has the best training, all of it. But if there's ever an instance where it's your Toyota Corolla against my Honda Civic and the cars are equal and it's who's the better driver, if that instance ever comes, you're screwed. And your response to that is, oh, not with Richard Petty changing my tires. But we're saying at some point, the game's going to come down to Mac Jones. At some point, it is. One time this year, it could have. In what you could argue was the biggest regular season game Belichick has been involved in since the undefeated season. Against Tom Brady in Foxborough with a chance to reframe the narrative. And he said, do I trust Mac Jones's right arm to get me 3 yards? Or do I trust my kicker to get me 56 yards? And he said, trot out there, Nick Folk. We've seen it, Jenna. Well, we've seen it in Wilds knows.
He outplayed Brady that
Jenna,
game.
Jenna, about the racing, hard for him to drive because he has little hooves. Hard to hit for him to hold on to the wheel with his little hooves.
Undisputed starts right now.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.